This is Leah Hensley with Audio Gals. Today, I'm honored to talk with the husband and wife writing team known as Ilona Andrews and the narrator of their books, Renee Rodman. Today also marks the release of Burn For Me, the first book in their Hidden Legacy series. Ilona, Gordon, and Renee, welcome to Audio Gals.
Thanks for having me back, Leah. I really appreciate it. This is very exciting.
Thank you so much for inviting us. We're very excited to chat with you guys.
Howdy.
That's good. All right. I want to give a special thanks to Renee for coordinating this talk for us today. For our listeners, Renee and I actually met in person at the RWA conference this summer in San Antonio. That's the Romance Writers of America. And we were actually able to spend time together. Renee, it was so enjoyable getting to know you.
Oh, Leah, it was a lot of fun. Not only was the RWA conference a real treat in getting to meet so many of the authors that I've worked for over the years, but to get to know more about Audio Gals and all about romance and you. And it was just really a nice time.
I know you spent some time with Ilona and Gordon at RWA as well. Was this your first time to meet in person?
Yes, and I was completely smitten by them. They, after all these years, and we'd never had the chance to meet in person. And what's neat is they are exactly who I thought they would be in person. But I felt like a groupie getting to have some time with them.
Well, Ilona and Gordon, I understand that the two of you are a writing team. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works?
Our desks are very close. We talk continuously about the books, even when we're doing other things like driving or loading the dishwasher. We usually start by plotting out together. Our process has been, when the weather permits, we sit in the pool and we drink beer and we plot the story out.
That's a good time.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, so we can't complain. And we're very strict with ourselves. We don't get out to the pool until we basically have something resembling a plot. But I think that's how it normally starts. We kind of have the plot.
Yes, it helps to do something else besides, you know, just sit there and stare at each other and say, well, we should come up with a fancy plot turn here. Usually we end up plotting while we're like driving somewhere or cleaning the kitchen or doing something that's, you know, something else basically that occupies us. And we kind of plot things out. We try to plot in chunks if it makes sense. Like we know the beginning, we know the end of the book usually before we start the manuscript. But then it kind of comes in sections, okay? For this section, we plot out five or six scenes loosely, yeah. And then we start, you know, writing.
What if they do this? Or, you know, more recently, I guess the biggest thing was kind of something we need. We needed something to move the story forward. So we probably sat for a good couple of hours, I guess.
Yeah.
Just, can we do this? Can we do that? Okay. And finally, what we settle on, what ends up hopefully being making sense on the page, is something that we kind of came up with together.
Because our stories tend to be a little bit of mystery, or at least like police procedural type of stories. So occasionally, like, we will paint ourselves into a corner. We'll be like, okay, well, we gave our people no clues. How are we going to solve this? You know, we couldn't solve this with what we have, you know. So sometimes you have to go backtrack and sort of leave the trail of breadcrumbs through and stuff. But that's kind of how we work. We are we generally write the first draft kind of together. I primarily type it out because he will go into this creative place where it becomes the wall of text.
Yeah.
It has like no punctuation, just like occasional. Or he'll replace like all of the periods with commas, and it will be like just one endless sentence. It just keeps going with many, many commas. You know, so I write the first draft out, and then we edit it. Gordon edits it. Gordon does a lot of the male dialogue because we want our men to sound like men, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because sometimes women don't always react well to when men sound like men. They're like, but we want them to say this. It's like, well, he's a guy. He's not going to, you know. So that's kind of how we work. It's a collaboration.
Yeah, I guess it's a partnership, just like being married.
Well, that method has certainly proven to be successful with your fans. Burn for Me, Book One in your new Hidden Legacy series releases today. In fact, we started a 6 audiobook giveaway of Burn for Me yesterday, and we are all so enthused to finally get to listen. I'm fortunate enough to have received an advanced review copy last week from Harper Audio, so I'm already deeply into it. Can you tell our listeners the setup for the new series?
Oh, my goodness. We kind of were trying to play with the idea, what if in the previous century, instead of discovering all those technological weapons that we have, like mustard gas, and, you know, all those atrocities, sort of technological that we invented, what if people instead invented a serum that brought out latent magical powers? You know, you took the serum and suddenly you were able to use magic. You could probably, you know, make fire, set things on fire, or shoot lightning, or you could teleport, or you could do extraordinary things. So they had that set up. They got the serum, and then they were like, oh my goodness, this is great. We're going to give it to everybody. So they gave it to a lot of prominent people, and then they had a war, and the war was completely horrible.
So they had like a World War One type situation, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so they decided, hey, this is not a good idea. So they basically locked away the serum, but unfortunately, what they didn't realize is that the magical traits that people developed were genetic, and they got passed on to their children. So fast forward to present-day Houston, now we have magical dynasties. We have basically the families that own large corporations that are very powerful and wealthy, and they're kind of, you know, marrying for wealth, looks, and magic.
Yeah, so they're marrying to keep those levels of power very high, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with a lot of very pretty, rich, powerful people, sort of. And that's their cult of celebrity, kind of, in that world, I guess. Even more so than actors or singers. Those people are considered basically
celebrities,
yeah. They're followed on social media.
They even have, there's actually a social network in the world that's called The Herald, that's devoted exclusively to basically fan fiction about all those families, you know, and the various stories. And so the families are kind of graded by the levels of power or magic they're able to conjure up. And the most important families, the most powerful ones, are called houses. The users within houses are usually prime magic users. They're very, very powerful.
The head of the family is always a prime.
So in this world lives Nevada Baylor. Nevada Baylor is a young woman. She owns a family, small family firm. It's a small investigative agency. It was started by her father and mother, but her father died because of a long illness. And her mother is a veteran of war, and she was a POW. She became injured, and she is not able to do most of the investigative work that needs to be done. So Nevada is basically it. She's kind of the primary breadwinner for her large family.
And she, you know, and that's a responsibility, I think, that she takes very seriously. And she's always kind of cognizant of that. What if I do something dumb, you know, then it's not just me, it's the family that would suffer. And I guess she just kind of has that
mentality
and challenge of having to support the family in a way, be responsible for her younger siblings or cousins.
Yeah. She has a certain magical talent. She is a truth seeker. She is able to tell when somebody is lying, which makes it a very, very, very useful talent for a private detective to have. Well, the story starts with Nevada being kind of cold on the carpet. When her father was sick, they mortgaged the firm to a much larger, prestigious investigative
agency. Which is also owned by one of the families.
Yes, it's owned by Montgomery House, and they are very, very powerful people. And they call her and they're like, hi, yeah, I know we never asked you to do anything before, but the contract we have says we can. So we're going to need you to bring this guy in. And this guy turns out to be an incredibly powerful pyrokinetic. He sets things on fire. He's spoiled, he's filthy rich, and he managed to kill a policeman. And his family now wants him back because every policeman in Houston is kind of gunning for him.
Yeah, the fear of the family is that, he'll be shot on sight rather than never stand trial. So her job is to bring him in and make sure he's surrendered to the authorities and stands trial. Because it's basically, Adam's family has asked Montgomery's to do this, and sort of it's like a weird house relationship that they have. They have to at least pretend to do it, so they get
Nevada to do it.
And that way, if Nevada gets killed, they can be like, well, we put our best people on it.
Yes, and look, nothing happened, you know. The best way to describe it is it's almost like the Medicis or like the mafia families with magic.
Yeah.
So their relationships are very complicated. So Nevada goes after Adam Pierce, and in the course of going after Adam Pierce, she runs across this war hero who runs his own house. His name is Connor Rogan. He is mostly known as Mad Rogan because he tends to destroy things in cities, basically. He wipes them out. So, and he's supposed to be this crazy recluse that's imbalanced and nobody has seen for many years. But anyway, he's involved for personal reasons. And it's this strange thing. It's a race of trying to get to Adam, find Adam, bring him in safely. At the same time, it's the fact that Nevada is kind of a good person. And Rogan is kind of he's got a very particular set of ethics. So she's continuously having to pull him back from, like, no, you can't just randomly choke the person to get information out. And that's what it makes for a very exciting, fun relationship. And we hope that when Renee was reading the book that she enjoyed their little repartee.
I loved it. Oh, my God.
Well, we're so glad. We were so lucky to get Renee to do it because it's a different house, again, a different publisher. So we were actually very fortunate that we were able to get Renee to do the thing again.
And
I'm really glad.
I have to thank both of you for, you know, not only suggesting I be on board, but for trusting me enough on a new series, because I just don't think that would be an easy choice to make, you know, because I've been so lucky to be on the other ones. And when you start a new series, you want a whole fresh new feel to it. And of course, I hope that I brought it to it, but I really love the book. It's got great tension,
awesome
romance, funny. Oh my gosh. Again, we would just have to stop recording because your characters are so strong. And that grandma and it's grandma. Oh, we couldn't even get her lines. You all are going to love grandma. And is it bug?
Yes, yes.
Bug.
Oh, he's just, I don't know how you guys do it. I think you should just stay in the pool with beer because they are so well detailed and fleshed out. So anyway, I'll stop gushing, but I really mean it. It's I feel so lucky, and I love Burn for Me. Absolutely love it.
That's awesome.
There's a following. She has her own following in all of our books. And I see Twitters from them, and they're like, well, I have seen the Burn for Me, but I will wait until audiobook comes out.
Yeah, you would be surprised how many people, they love you, Renee. I think they would lynch us if anyone else basically did the book.
We're probably in that group that we really love Renee performing her books. I mean, we're like huge fans of that.
Yeah, I think if I heard anyone else do it, it just wouldn't sound...
It wouldn't sound the same.
No, it wouldn't sound quite
exactly. Exactly. Oh, glad you see it that way, because we certainly do. Now, I understand that since you're releasing through Avon, so does that mean this series may be taking a more romantic direction?
We hope so.
The way we have it planned out right now is we have a trilogy. and we're hoping to build the romantic arc, you know, to happily ever after in the course of three books. It's just that the characters are so diametrically opposed to each other, Nevada and Rogan, in their view, it's really, really difficult to you know, it would be forcing them kind of into the happily ever after within confines of one book. We need actually the length of those three books to be able to develop that relationship to a level where it could become love. Right now it would be just kind of, you know, casual sex, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I think that what Avon brings and what Erica, our Avon Edger, really brings is that allows us to have, I think, that extra romantic element, or to even focus maybe a little bit more to where it is more paranormal romance than urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. I think we have a little bit more freedom with that, I think, too.
Erica has been fantastic, and we're hoping to just... sometimes, as a writer, you want a little bit of room to sort of stretch out and really build the relationship the way you want it to sort of develop. And it's just, you know, when they came to us and they said, you know, trilogy, we were really happy with the fact that it's going to be three books and we can actually, you know, do a very, you know, involved, interesting romantic relationship. I always feel like I'm not one of those people that's like, okay, they got together and that's it, I'm overdone. But I always feel like the initial stages of the relationship, the maneuvering, the trying to figure out what the other person is thinking, you know, the small misunderstandings that happen along the way, they're so fascinating. And we kind of wanted to play a little bit with that.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, Renee, I know that, as we just said, we were excited to see that you continued as a narrator for this new series. And you've mentioned, I guess, the uniqueness of these characters. Did you see any challenges in creating these?
Yes and no. You know, the good news is that Ilona and Gordon create such unique, fun, and interesting characters. And then the bad news is, as a narrator, they create such fun, unique, and interesting characters. And so, you know, wanting to do right by that and I guess making sure, too, that they don't replicate any prior series. I mean... Yeah. Obviously, Kate and Curran are such strong characters, and you write them. What I love about your books is that you write the women strong, smart, ass-y, and I don't know if I can say that on here, and the men like men. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I love all of those things. And so, you know, there are elements of that in terms of characteristics of your characters that come through on this one. So I really wanted to make sure that nothing sounded like, you know, other prior characters. And so you make me work really hard, first of all. But
Sorry.
No, it's all good. So when I pre-read the book, so that's a big challenge. You know, that's my biggest fear, is that something's going to come out and people are going to go, well, it's just these two characters again. And so I really worked hard to not have that happen. In fact, In this case, I was even lucky enough to get to collaborate a little bit with Ilona and Gordon, you know, asking them if I could do certain things with characters, if that would be okay. And so that was really neat to be able to have that opportunity. And we've not really ever done that in any of the past series. But when I pre-read the book, we write down every single character, everything that you describe about them, you know, their age, where they're from, all of that. And as I read and I hear their dialogue in my mind's eye, I just try to trust the picture that comes into my mind. Now, it's probably not the same picture of the, you know, that you write, but, I put all those details down and then try to give it the voice that that character looks like or sounds like they should have. And so this is the fourth series we've worked on, and so it becomes more challenging with every series. But like I said, they're so unique that it feels it's not as hard as it could be, for sure. And it's so much fun. There is a scene that takes place with someone inside the house and someone outside a window. And it's brilliant. And I just think it's the perfect budding romance. Everyone's going to love it. It's going to love the book for sure.
I hope so. The thing is that people don't often realize is that I think audiobooks are transformative in nature. I think that when an audio reader adds their narration to a book, it becomes something else. It's not just the book that you have written. It is now another person is involved in the creative process. It is very much a creative process. So I always feel, Renee always like emails and she's like, okay, how do you pronounce this? Do you mind if he has this accent? And I always feel really funny, kind of, you know, even talking about it because it's so much of her narration.
Yeah, it's weird. When I listen to an audiobook, it's like the author is reading the book to me, honestly, in my head. So honestly, like, I think when Renee does it, she adds something to it that's even we don't have, and she kind of makes it her own.
Yeah, it's her own work.
And yeah, exactly. It is. It becomes her own work, and it's something more even than the book is.
Yeah, she's performing it. She's bringing it to life. I agree totally. It becomes a different thing. And one thing that amazes me, I'm going to be on the Renee Adoration Committee for a minute. You have four series, okay? I'm listening to this fourth right now. I've listened to Clean Sweep, and I've listened to the other two, the Kate Daniels and The Edge. And it amazes me what she just was talking about. Her characters don't sound the same from one series to the next. Curran, to me, is one of the sexiest heroes out there when it comes to audio format. I haven't heard her repeat that in another series, but yet those heroes are equally sexy with the deep voice and all that. So how do you do that, Renee?
Oh, well for, again, it's all about, first of all, I love sexy male characters because, you know, I try to make them like I want them to want me. I try to create the men that I want to want me. I mean, I'm happily engaged. What did you say?
We might quote you on that, actually.
Oh, yeah. But that's the truth is when I read your characters, I think that's why they're so exciting because I think, oh, that's the kind. I mean, what woman doesn't want this strong, totally sexy, powerful man chasing them down? And what I, of course, I love, you know, that it can't be over too quickly. So it builds and builds. But I think, okay, so I create your men like I would want them to sound and be if they were coming after me. So I get to fall in love and have all this exciting romance, you know, every day I step in the studio. What better job, right? But one thing that's interesting is, and this is one of the reasons why I contacted you about Burn For Me and about certain aspects is because, again, when we did the Magic series, when we started that back in 2009, you know, we had no idea it was, or maybe you did.
We had no idea. We were surprised there was a second book, actually.
Yeah, they want the sequel.
One of the things that's been interesting over the many years is when you've taken the books and you've delved in to some of the other characters that maybe had one line or were barely mentioned. And if I gave voice to it, or, you know, in the first couple of books, for example, well, like book four or five, I found out that Andrea had a Southern accent, for example, you know, and I'm like, oh boy, how do I fix this one? And then I think I heard you, Gordon, sometime, we pronounce Hugh Diambre completely different. So you know, you clearly heard it a different way when you wrote. I felt terrible about that. And then Hugh, I did a certain way, and then there would be more description in another book. And I think, okay, where am I going to get crucified more if I change the voice? Which I lean toward the new description, and that's not new. It's just new to me in my head. Or do I keep consistent and then get yelled at because, you know, Hugh is this way anyway? So that's why I thought I'm not going to find out I hope not to find out later on, for example, in Burn for Me, that Mad Rogan is, you know, from someplace else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's secretly British.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact,
Clean Sweep, this is a great question for you, Ilona and Gordon. In Clean Sweep, she grew up in Georgia. So I gave her a round accent, the southern. And then later on, I thought maybe they meant Georgia, Russia.
No, your Dina is awesome.
Dina is awesome. Oh my God. And, I have to tell you about the experience of doing the Clean Sweep, right? It was our independent project, and Renee very, very, very generously agreed to do it for us. We have never thought that she would, because
we couldn't afford her.
Yeah, not only we couldn't afford her normally, but it's just like, the big audio readers, the star audio readers like she is, they don't typically work on independent projects as much. So, and Clean Sweep was our independent baby. So our agency talked to Renee, and they were like, yeah, you know, she said she'll do it. You know, here's the thing. We have the contract. So here we are. And by this point, we had sunk a lot of money and effort into this project, right? And we got back the sample of the recording from our agent, right? So we're sitting there. We're like kind of pensively huddled around the computer, and we're listening to basically the audio recording going. And it's a very simple scene, right? Basically, Dina is an innkeeper. And she runs a magical inn. And in the middle of the night, she's awakened by a disturbance. She feels a disturbance. So she's like, okay. She goes out on the balcony of her inn to investigate. And she sees a werewolf in a orchard, you know, relieving himself. And... And here comes this line. I can't do it. Renee would have to do it properly.
Yeah, we could be like, Sean Evans. I can't.
Yeah, Sean Evans.
It was awesome.
So
we died.
On my Apple thing. We died. We just rolled. We knew at that point that we had a hit.
Yeah. Oh,
that one line made it. It made it. It was like, okay, this is going to do so well. And it did.
Okay, we have to take a minute to listen to this scene from Clean Sweep that Ilona and Gordon were so taken with. Our interview will resume immediately afterwards.
Soundlessly, the door swung open in front of me, and I stepped out onto the balcony. In the orchard, 20 yards from the house, Sean Evans was urinating on my apple tree. You've got to be kidding me. Stop that, I hissed in a theatrical whisper. He ignored me. His back was to me, and he was still wearing the same jeans and gray T-shirt I had seen him in that morning. Sean Evans, I see you. Stop marking your territory on my apple tree.
Don't worry, he said without turning. It won't hurt the apples.
The nerve! How would you know? You've probably never grown an apple tree in your entire life.
You wanted me to handle it, he said. I'm handling it.
He was handling it all right.
Now back to the interview.
You were told you had a Georgia accent. A Russian once in school told Ilona that she had a Georgian accent.
Georgian accent. She's
like Georgia, Georgia. Like our
really?
Georgia. Yes.
Well, I get it from Texas, Texans sometimes. And I'm like, you know, I'll say something like perfectly normal and sounding like all y'all. And they're like, you don't pronounce y'all the same way we y'all.
Well, we've totally hijacked this interview, I think.
Well, this actually, Clean Sweep is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Could you all tell us a little bit? You know, I listened to Clean Sweep. And I did not realize the nature of it, how you all had released it. Can you tell people about the serial nature of what you're doing with that series?
Oh, boy.
It's something fun to write, and it's episodic, I think. And it's, I think for us, I mean, at least for me personally, it's something, it's kind of fun to do as a break from writing other stuff that we're kind
contracted
of, that we're contracted for. There's no more polite way to say it, but stuff that we owe people, and it's kind of fun to do it. And I think the biggest difference is honestly, with Clean Sweep, we never have as much of it plotted out, I think,
no,
as we do the other books.
We don't. And
it's almost as it's put out, and we write it, it's put out. We don't have it like as planned out, maybe. So the way people get it is kind of as much of the story even as we know.
It's, you know, there's several different reasons why we did what we did. What we did actually was we, the way the Clean Sweep and the next book in the series Sweeping Peace are being released is that we write a chunk, you know, like a scene typically, mm-hmm. and we put it out onto basically the website. It's a rough mm-hmm. draft. People can see it and read it for free. And then at the end of things, when the book is completed, we actually take it, we turn it into an ebook, and we release it. Originally, we started this for a number of reasons. We had, the way we sold it to our agent was this. We said, look, because her initial reaction was like, okay, you're going to release a book for free.
You're going to put it on the internet.
On the internet.
Yes.
Why? And you know, what if nobody buys it after basically, you know, after it's released, you know, for free? How is it going to work? And the way we sold it to our agent was we said, look, you know, our books come out with at least 6 months between the releases. We need to do something meanwhile. This would be a very good way to keep us kind of in front of the audience. But unfortunately, that was kind of basically a ploy on our part. Mostly what we really like is there's a certain instant gratification, and you put a piece of fiction out there and people get really into it and they get excited and they want to talk about it in the comments, and they're like, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? Oh, I really like that character. Oh, I hate that character. I wish somebody would punch him in the face. You know, they get really involved. And for us as the writers, it's pure crack. It's the only way I can describe it.
Did you say it's crack?
Yes. Because, you know, it's very
addictive.
I'm more
addictive. Of a meth guy, I think.
Okay. it's horribly addicting because you sit there and you're like, people are reading my thing.
Yeah, and there's not the weariness that comes. I don't know for Renee, but sometimes the thing is, like, by the time a book comes out, with the editing process and galleys and everything, we're doing something else, and we have to kind of remember what that book was about because we're writing something completely different. And there's even a point where we kind of hate it, where we hate the book.
We hate the book.
We hate it. We're tired of editing it. But there's with that. Sorry, I didn't mean to get you started. Yeah. But with Clean Sweep, she's right. There's none of that. It's kind of like you put it out there, and people like it or they don't like it.
And we can do whatever. We have like holy knights that are actually vampires that are from space.
We get to do kind of a sci-fi, more of a sci-fi.
Yeah, it's a very, very light sci-fi. It's kind of like
a sci-fi
masquerading as an urban fantasy. And we have lots of fun with it. You know, and we get to have illustrations, and we get to have just all the fun things that we don't typically have in a novel.
Renee, I know you did something different whenever you recorded Clean Sweep. Did you produce it, or what was that happened?
Right. Because this was a direct collaboration, we, you know, my studio and the people that I can bring into that I bring into work with, we produced the whole thing in my studios. We, you know, recorded it, edited it, engineered it, finished it, and sent it right to the source, essentially. And they proofed it. I don't know if it was actually Ilona and Gordon who proofed it, but there was maybe it was your agent, I think, and they sent back some, you know, some slight changes or mistakes that I had made. we call them pickups or pups. I call them pups. And sent them back. And it was pretty cool to get to work just direct. And there was kind of an ease and fun about that. And it was pretty exciting, actually, because, you know, how often do you get to directly produce something with New York Times number one bestsellers, right? That's a pretty great opportunity. And it's such a great book and, you know, beginning to a series. And it was just really exciting. And I, too, was sort of nervous because I think to myself, why would someone buy an audio book when it's been given away free online every week? And, you know, I guess they did. Yeah, you said that it was successful.
Oh, it was a huge bestseller.
I think they bought it to hear you to read it.
Yeah, they bought it to read it. Yeah. No. Renee, we made back our investment.
Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy. Yeah.
So it was just.
Oh, we should do seminars.
Yeah. Oh gosh, yes. The motivational speakers, but no, the response has been tremendous. And then the people really love it. They really love your narration. They really love the audiobook. We even got comments on the new one where we have this new character. They're kind of a race of intergalactic merchants, and they look like little foxes. They're about 4 feet tall, and they're very cute. Uh-huh. There's just one tiny fox, right? He's very young. He's like the youngest member of their delegation. His name is Cookie. And he's just very, very cute. And he comes over and he says things like, "Miss Innkeeper, did you find that one thing?" You know, and somebody already said, "I wonder how Renee is going to do it."
I love it.
We haven't even gotten that far, guys. Come on.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
Well, I noticed when I was looking through your list of books that you have some short stories, basically. And Gordon, I see that you've written two shorter books from Curran's point of view.
Oh.
And I believe they are being offered in one volume as a free download at your site right now. But, okay, we're audio fans here. First of all, do you plan on continuing with these books featuring Curran? And our even bigger question is, do you have plans to release these in audio format?
I try to do them when I can. Right now I'm doing one with Jim. So obviously it's Jim and Dolly. It's kind of, I don't know how spoilery I can say.
Not very spoilery. We got in trouble.
Did we really?
Yes.
Oh, crap. no, I like to do them. They're fun. I mean, I kind of think of them as just a fan service and something fun to do because the books obviously are from Kate's point of view. And you don't, unless Curran explicitly says something, you don't know what he thought in the scene or what, mm-hmm. you know, what, like specifically, I think the most fun one to do was when he saw Kate and Simon at a restaurant and kind of the murderous things that were going through his head. I don't know. If we found someone that wanted to do narration for them, I mean.
Yeah, it's so kind of difficult because.
We're never going to sell them, though. That's kind of the difference.
That's the problem. We're never going to.
They're free. Just they'll always be free. Yeah.
Perhaps we can chat about some of these other things if nobody owns the audio rights.
As to our the Curran stuff, no.
The Curran stuff, no.
No, there's no audio rights. We own them, I guess.
We own them, I guess.
I would love to see that. You know, we know this gal that does really good Curran. So.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you do. Well,
that would be the good thing.
It's
mostly. Yeah, I think it's mostly just Curran in his head, and sometimes with Jim. That's the most fun, actually, is when Curran and Jim, because they get to do the banter back and forth. They're very funny kind of guys. When no one is around, and they don't have to be like...
Yeah, chief of security and the Beast Lord.
Yeah, when they're just two friends hanging out, sort of.
those are some of the best ones, I think, you know. It's just... And he comes up with the funniest lines, like, what was it... I don't even remember. There's stuff that he comes up with that is just hilarious. Like, well, my memory of this woman's butt and this woman seemed to be surprisingly clear. I wonder why. You know, he's
scared.
Maybe we'll have to have a little. Maybe there's something we can work out at a later date or something.
That'd be awesome.
That would be fantastic.
If we could talk about two of your existing series, the Kate Daniels series and the Edge series. The Kate Daniels, you are still writing that series, is that correct?
Yes.
Did I hear that you had three more planned?
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? I believe you have, what, 8 or 9 out right now?
Seven. seven. We have
well,
seven.
Well, if you count Andrea's
book, yeah, it's eight. But here's the thing. We came to the conclusion, originally we planned to end it at seven books. We came to the conclusion, and we had, I probably won't spoil anything if I say that a lot of the series centers on Kate, on what happens when Kate's biological father, who is incredibly powerful, discovers her existence. And when we came to the book seven, we knew we had a problem really by book six. In book six, a lot of the reviewers and critics and just readers emailed us and said, how are you going to fix this in one book? And we're like, oi. And then we wrote out the book seven. And there was just, there was no way because her father turns out to be this really weird, fascinating dude. There was no way to kind of just nuke him quickly and say, hi, this is the end of the series. You know, so Ace at that point contacted us and they were like, well, why are you going to do more books? Mm-hmm. Because the books are selling and we like money. Mm-hmm. You know, so we talked about it and we decided that we would sort of take these three books and resolve the problem.
Yeah, we want to give it a proper ending. And we can honestly say that by the end of the third book, or what will be the tenth book,
yeah,
there will be a definite end to the series.
Issue of Roland and Kate, yeah.
Yeah, their rivalry, their conflict or whatever will be permanently resolved.
Yes.
And Kate and Curran will get there happily ever after.
And
children too. I can say that. I can say whatever I want.
You know, one time Ruh-roh. He was having a chat, and he basically told people, like, yes, I walked away for like a minute. Aunt B is really a man.
Yes.
And she's running off with a Mahan, and Kate is going to marry Raphael. And it, next thing I know, I come back, and there's all those questions. What? I'm like, don't be feeling
it well. No, but that's the straight stuff, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
No, we can say that they're going to have, because I got a bunch of those questions. There will be a child.
The Goodreads question.
Yeah, the Goodreads question. So that cat's out of the bag, dude. Yeah. I've already.
they're running, Goodreads is running some kind of promotion now to where they emailed everybody who liked the books and they're like, hey, you know, they have their Ask the Author thing turned on. Go ask them a question. So we're bombarded with this enormous volume of questions, and there's no telling, because he's been answering them. There's no telling, you know, no secrets were revealed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we were hoping to kind of, I think that Kate and Curran probably earned their happily ever after. They fought for it, they bled for it. That would be nice to see them happy. So, but we thought about doing maybe sort of smaller stories with other characters from the series.
Yeah, there's still going to be characters that are from the pack. And a surprising, that's actually one of the things that we've discussed recently, and we wanted to be an element in the series. Oh, can I? That certain people from the pack have come with them, I guess, into their semi-retirement or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and it forms its own little core of people. And, you know, and there's just different people have different fans, sort of. Like, some people really like Barabbas, and some people really like Ramon, the dark wolf wizard. He's got a lot of fans. You know, to the point where sometimes people are like, well, I read the book, it was a good book, I was entertained, but this one character I was not in the book. Three stars.
Derek wasn't in the book one time, and we got in so much trouble.
Yeah, people were so upset Derek wasn't in the book, and I was like, well, you know, we have a large cast, we can't always have everybody.
And that was actually a big thing with Magic Rises. That was a long process, deciding who would go.
Who would go? Yeah, we're like, okay, how mad can we make our fan base here?
Yeah, who gets to go? Who gets to go to the caucuses, and who doesn't get to go? And because the realization would be that, like, you know, for instance, you know, Jim and all the people, they're not in that, basically. Mm-hmm. They're not in that book because they're back at home, so I don't know.
Yeah, so we were hoping to just do kind of smaller stories, you know, or maybe like more independent projects or something like that. So you don't have to necessarily say goodbye to all the characters in the world. And we can even do cameos with Kate and Curran, but we just don't. We feel that the story has to end. Otherwise, we're like writing never-ending series.
Yeah, if there's any more books after book 10, Kate and Curran definitely won't be the focus of them. It'll be other characters, and you'll see Kate and Curran, but they will be characters kind of in the background.
Mm-hmm. Well, on your Edge series, that actually was my personal favorite. But it is over. Is that correct? It's
done with. It is.
Yeah.
It is, except that, and I don't know how much you've read of the new clean sweep, the sweep in peace. Jack and George and Mark and Gaston are even in that.
Yeah.
So that is in our small way, if not to continue the series, at least to revisit some of those characters.
Mm-hmm. Brenda was telling me exactly that she was these characters. She was seeing them and pretty thrilled. Brenda, I mean, I've read all your books, but Brenda is like an Ilona Andrews expert. So she knows all about it. But anyway, she was telling me all about this. But I think one thing I liked about the Edge series is because there was that HEA wrap-up at the end of each book. And I just loved the world building. And I just, you know, I just got so deeply involved in that. But anyway, that's just my own little fan thing I get to say here. So sorry to see it end.
No,
but
we liked The Edge, and we did like that we were able to have a different couple kind of in each story.
It was both a very rewarding and a very frustrating experience in a sense, because we really enjoyed, you know, having kind of this complicated setup and having different worlds and having romances within the ranks of, you know, limits of those worlds. But, you know, we have gotten to the point where by probably the book 4, we have mostly said what we wanted to say about it. And it just didn't seem like we could significantly add to it creatively.
Yeah, we would have just artificially kind of extended the life of the series.
The publisher actually was, people sometimes like, well, a publisher canceled it. And no, they didn't cancel it. They wanted more books. The books were selling very well. It's just the problem was that we creatively could not sort of continue. We kind of got tapped out. I don't know why that happened, actually. Usually,
I could say, but I'm not going to.
Well, yeah, there were many different reasons, I think, that were surrounding it. But it's surprising, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned it. Since the series ended, we have had so many people come out and say, I really love the series. I just discovered it. I really love it. I really love it. And I was like, well,
where were you when we were putting
it out? Yeah, because when it came out, well, it's not that it didn't do so well. It was like, when it came out, the overwhelming reaction, at least from our corner of the world, was, this is not Kate Daniel. Why isn't this Kate Daniel? You know?
Yeah.
But we're happy that it finally stands on its own, even though, you know, it took some years for it to do it.
I will tell you how the Edge started, though.
Oh, no, you will not.
Yes.
No, you will not. No, don't.
Okay. No, she's like, I'm going to write the romance, and it will make a ton of money.
Yeah, it makes some money.
That works. Renee, it looks as though you recorded the first in the Kate Daniels series in 2009. Now, I know you may not remember specific events in your professional life 5 years ago, but do you recall preparing for this series? Was it your first urban fantasy? And do you recall your thoughts on vocally creating those characters, Kate and Curran in particular?
Well, you know, as we mentioned, this was so many years ago, and had I known it was a series, I would have taken a lot more notes. But I just thought when I first read the book, when I was pre-reading, I thought, who are these authors that come up with so many characters in one book and they're all so fleshed out and there's 100 accents and, oh yeah, Ilona is Russian. And I think you had a lot of Russian in that first book. And I'm saying, so I had to call, you know, I had to get a hold of them and say, can you please leave the Russian on my phone? You know, so she's left all this Russian on my phone. I'm like, what have I done? I was really green at this point, and I thought, what have I stepped into? This is going to be the biggest failure, you know, in my early career. I just, pre-reading, I was completely overwhelmed. And then, in fact, when I started in audiobooks, I didn't know that much about audiobooks other than I'd always loved audiobooks, but I didn't know from the narrator standpoint, even though I've had a voiceover career for years, just not in this genre, so or medium. But their characters were so descriptive that I was never sure about how far I was going to be allowed to go. For example, you know, especially when they would turn into animal form, the shapeshifters would turn into animal form, and I'm thinking, okay, I have no idea. Do I go all the way? Do I make them sound like animals? Do I, you know, it was so scary to me, again, being my first book. And so I just didn't know how far to go with it. And I figured, well, I'm going to commit. And so Curran came up via, I thought, well, he's a lion, right? You know, and when he growls, I better growl. And he growled a lot, you know. This was a whole new realm for me, and it was my first urban fantasy. And I thought, is this what they're all like? Like all urban fantasy audiobooks, do they all go all the way? And I really didn't have time to go research that. And so I just threw all the marbles in, and I growled, and I meowed, and I, you know, and in fact, I missed a lot. When I had pre-read the book, this true story, I got to like page 400 when I was narrating the book, and somehow I missed that Mahon had a Scottish accent and had to go back and replace every one of his lines. One line, you know, these are the things you never know. Well, anyway, so now the book turns into 9 or 8 books, you know, and each time, like this last book, I think they brought back every single character. And the prep time took twice as long as the book to record. Yes. It was like 180 characters from a span of... So I had a whole other computer. This is true. I'm in the recording studio. My engineer has pulled a lot of voices from the more current ones. And so now I have a library to go to. But the first several were on a completely different computer system. We recorded, because of the publisher at that time, it records completely different. So every time I'd go, oh gosh, I forgot who, and I'd listen to them all. I opened up all the old books and would find, and but you know, this was a long book. So I think it was 16 hours. So, you know, 5 hours in, I'm like, I don't remember what this one said. So I'd get out of the booth, run back, open up that particular book. So it was interesting. Had I known then what I know now, just about the industry as a whole, it might have been a more a little bit smoother process, but I wouldn't have changed it for the world, because being introduced to those books by two truly such amazing authors, it was the best trial by fire ever. So anyway.
Well, of course, I write about audiobooks. I have written about romance audiobooks, gosh, at least 6-7 years now. And that's what happened to me with the Kate Daniels series, is it was interesting to me in print. But when I heard Renee perform it, it became a must-have to me. And I just had to have it delivered in that format. So I don't look at the print anymore. I only listen to the audio. In fact, despite all those details, she keeps it all together for me, you know. And I think really detailed books, sometimes I need to have the print format so I can go back and I can check all the little details. But Renee keeps it all together for me. So thank you.
Thank you.
It is absolutely wonderful. Wonderful. I think that you're absolutely right. I am listening to Jack Campbell series. It's kind of like The Lost Fleet. It's kind of like the space battle thing. It's super fascinating. But and the narrator is really, really good. Here's the problem. I listened to one of them on the flight, right? And I got to about halfway point. And then when I came home after the flight, I was like, well, I'll just street, you know. I couldn't do it. Because I had the half of the audiobook, I couldn't go back and, like, read from that point on because my brain kept trying to make voices, you know? And then the writer just match all this. I was like, okay, I give up. I'll just listen to it.
Yeah, no, we listened, and we listened to a part of it yesterday. For some reason, we had to go to Houston and then drive back the same day. And, yeah, now I'd rather be in the car and listen to it than probably read it. So I think that's the magic of a good
audiobook.
Audiobook, and we have probably the best. So
yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
You do.
Yeah.
We always like to end our talks by giving each of you the opportunity to talk about other projects you have in the works. Are there any you want to share?
Renee?
Yes, Renee, please.
Well, on my end, I have this fantastic book coming out called Burn For Me. I hope you all love it. Through HarperCollins Audio. It's very exciting. It's a new series. Sexy and heart pounding and everything you want in a romance and exciting series. So there's that. From Blackstone Audio, I think on November 4th, Deeper Than the Grave, that's part of the Ty Randolph series and by Tina Whittle. And it's a really great book. It's some really interesting characters that she put together. And so it's a great love story and mystery as well. And then through Brilliance Audio, we just had The Lost Key, which is book two in the Brit and the FBI series. That was just released. That's by Catherine Coulter and J.T. Ellison. And I recorded that with McLeod Andrews. And what fun it is to be in the studio with another narrator and play off of each other. That's a real treat as well. And finally, I'm getting ready to produce another book in the lovely romance series by Marina Adair. And I think it's book six of the St. Helena Vineyard series. It's romance and wine, and you know, you can't go wrong there. Yeah. That's my list.
Well, let's see. Well, we also have this lovely book called Burn For Me coming out. What a coincidence. On October 28th. Let's see. We have the next thing, I believe, is the anthology that we're in, and it features Alini Singh, Lisa Sheeran, and Meljan Brook, who is actually writing under the pseudonym of Mila Vane, and I'm totally out with her, and that's fine. but we have a story in it, and it's about Jim and Dolly. So that's our next project, and I believe that comes out sometime in November. I want to say like towards the end of November. Other than that, we are kind of, we're just working on the next Kate book, and we're writing Sleep in Peace.
Yeah, and then after when we're done with the next Kate book, it will be the next book in the Hidden Legacy, I guess. Yeah. And we kind of have an idea for that.
Yeah, we have a firm idea for that. And it's you know, it's very nice because we kind of, I think, get an uninterrupted stretch to actually write.
Yeah, it seemed like, for a little while, it seemed like we were... Unfortunately, we were never home writing. We were always being alone with Andrews instead of actually
writing things. Exactly.
And that's tough. I'd rather be home writing the books.
To the point where our kids actually, you know, we kind of got a guilt trip. And they were like, you know, Mom, Dad, are you going to be home for Thanksgiving?
Oh. Yeah.
You know, And they're teenagers, so, you know, it's bad. They actually usually, you know, teenagers will let you out of the house, but no, they're actually like, okay, that's enough traveling for a little bit. So we're kind of looking forward to, you know, promotional stuff dying down a little bit and just sitting there, and hopefully we can deliver the next book and it won't be terrible.
Well, I kind of doubt that would ever happen. I just don't.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I'm telling you some stories.
By the way, I have to add that my birthday is on October 29th, and so somebody said to me, what do you want for your birthday? And I went, a great reception to Burn For Me.
This is Leah signing off. It was such a thrill to spend time talking with this dynamic author-narrator team. Our thanks to Gordon, Ilona, and Renee for joining us and giving us a look into their world. We're giving away 6 download copies of Burn For Me, and there's still time to enter through Wednesday the 29th. Thanks for spending time with us at Audio Gals.